My ambition after that trip to the Highlands was simply to see if Tasmania could make a really good single malt whisky.
We don't expect everyone to like these wines, so yes, there's some risk.
Drink more sherry, because that's when you can really educate yourself on what happens in maturation.
The thing is with Australian natives, you put them in a gin, the aftertaste invariably is just bitter and unpalatable.
I think the Irish whisky landscape is going to be wildly different over the next 5 years.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits, and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today.
Born and raised in Indiana, USA, Michter's master distiller Dan McKee moved to Kentucky to pursue his dream of making whiskey, beginning his career as a distillery operator at Jim Beam. 2 years later, he was promoted to distillery supervisor at the affiliated Booker No Distillery, where he worked for 7 years before following his boss Pam Heilman to Michter's. Dan succeeded Pam as Master Distiller of Michter's in 2019. He's played an integral role in assisting with the construction of the company's Chivalry Distillery and also its Fort Nelson site with the legendary pot stills and cypress wood fermenters from the original Michter's Pennsylvania operation. Michter's has had an incredible trajectory to being named World's Most Admired American Whiskey and the number two most admired whiskey overall, with some of its whiskies commanding $25,000 and above at auction. I'll leave it to Dan to explain the brand's somewhat unconventional history and its dedication to five key production values that he believes set Michter's apart from other American whiskies. We caught up while Dan was in Sydney recently, preparing to launch the 2022 edition of Michter's groundbreaking Celebration Sour Mash Whiskey, which we also discuss in this interview. Produced in partnership with Michter's. Dan McKee, thanks so much for joining us on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Very excited.
You sort of started your career in whiskey at the Beam Company, and I think you worked for a couple of distilleries, you know, that are sort of part of the Jim Beam family. When you arrived at Michter's, what kind of struck you about what was so different at Michter's versus where you'd come from at Beam?
Well, the obvious would just be the size of the companies themselves. You kind of come from a corporate environment to a family-owned business, a lot less layers at Michter's. Everybody wears a lot more hats. You have a lot of responsibilities. And just the focus and the immediate contact with ownership. And remember, we were building a brand at that time. We're, you know, coming from Jim Beam, which is an established company. Michter's has been going through three different phases since the 1990s. And so just being a part of that and the construction of the new distillery and hiring new team members that were going to bring us into the future, you know, that was pretty amazing.
What are those three phases that you're talking about?
Michter's itself has a very long and rich, proud history that dates back to 1753 in Pennsylvania, Schaeferstown, Pennsylvania. John Schenck, a Swiss Mennonite farmer, began distilling rye whiskey back then. By the mid-1800s, that distillery was sold to Abraham Bamberger, closed by Prohibition in 1919. Once it reopened after Prohibition, the distillery changed hands several times, but by the 1950s, a gentleman named Lou Foreman eventually became the owner, renamed the distillery Michter's after his two sons. He combined Michael and Peter together to get Michter's. Okay. But by 1989, though, the American whiskey industry was really struggling. Kind of clear spirits became in favor, and the distillery, unfortunately, went bankrupt and abandoned all the trademarks and essentially was lost to history. Our current ownership and president, Joe Malioko, was very familiar with the Michter's brand in the late 1970s. One of his tasks during on the distribution side of things was to sell these little King Tut miniatures. So being familiar with the brand, he set on a journey to resurrect the brand to Kentucky. So he acquired the trademarks. He worked with a very good friend of his and mentor, Richard Dick Newman. They came to Kentucky, and we entered what we call phase one in the 90s, where they went around to other distilleries in Kentucky and purchased matured spirits that they wanted to emulate. Their first releases were a 10-year-old Kentucky Straight Rye and a 10-year-old Kentucky Straight Bourbon. That started to go very well, so that in early 2000, they entered into what we call phase two. They took our mash bill, proprietary yeast specifications, and went to another distillery in Kentucky that had capacity, and they produced for us to our specifications. Kind of as Joe will say, a chef using another chef's kitchen. Phase two, and again, phase two was also came about because we still didn't have the financial resources to build your own distillery because it's very expensive. By 2012, Michter's was able to purchase a building in Shively, which is like a kind of a city within a city of Louisville, Kentucky. And they began with processing department and the bottling department. And then they started building the new distillery. And we've been distilling since August of 2015, which is very exciting because when you look at our like our US one lineup, the small batch, US one small batch bourbon, single barrel ryes and so forth, those are coming from the distillery now.
When did that transition happen?
It's happened for a little while. Yeah. We don't give the date that it happened, but the great thing about it, as it's been going on for a while, we are still doing those same techniques, those processes that phase two to phase three. So that was our goal, to make it as seamless as possible, continue making that high quality whiskey that came from phase two. We talk about the six key philosophies that we use in our production. They're all very important. You know, all of our products are either single barrel or small batch. Single barrel, again, you have to have very high quality, consistent barrels. There's actually no US regulation that says what a small batch is. It kind of just really needs to be smaller than your larger batch. But we actually sized our equipment to the equivalent of 20 full barrels. So truly small. One bad barrel can throw off the whole batch. We don't have that ability of like a 1,000 barrel batch where you can kind of blend in some maybe little subpar barrels and so forth. Each one of our barrels has to be of the highest quality. So it's either single barrel or small batch for us. Next, the wood staves that we use for our barrels, they're all air dried, seasoned for a minimum of 18 months, which, you know, the naturally occurring fungi begin to form on the wood and helps break the wood down and remove some of those tannins that we're not looking for in our whiskey. We don't want that bitterness and astringency. We toast before we char all of our wood. And then we do a very low barrel entry proof at 51.5%. We do heat cycling in our warehouses, and then we do the custom chilled filtration like I was spoke about a little while ago. But out of all of those, the most important one is the very low barrel entry proof at 51.5%. So as we're distilling, let's say 69% by US regulation and industry standard, you cannot enter into the barrel above 62.5%. We actually bring it down much lower to 51.5% by adding more water. So we have more waters up front, but it's very expensive. It makes you use more barrels and then also build more warehouses. But we believe the benefits far outweigh the cost. Adding more water up front helps dissolve the sugars more readily, but there's also phenolic compounds that come from the wood that cause that burn in whiskey. And over time, as they're not completely water soluble, there's the reaction that really kind of mellows out that burn. And when you taste through the Michter's lineup, you'll notice that we have very smooth whiskeys. And if you think about it, when we go in at a very low entry proof at 51.5%, we're going to come out somewhere around 55-56%. So we're only going to add a little more water at the time of bottling, whereas someone that went in at 62.5% may come out much higher, and they're going to add about 50% more water at that time, water that had no benefits of the maturing process. And that's why we feel we have very rich, well-balanced whiskeys.
You talk about the signature chill filtration process. Chill filtration is kind of, you know, in Scotch whiskey, it can be a bit of a dirty word to real Scotch whiskey enthusiasts. So how is it different in American whiskey? I think people think of chill filtration in Scotch whiskey as stripping out character.
Well, we look at it as we're creating a whiskey that meets our profile. So, you know, maybe I'm a little biased because, you know, I fully believe in what we're doing. Yeah. But I think really at the end of the day, it comes down to how you want to present your whiskey and how do you go about it. Remember, we're using a barrel for the very first time and we're toasting before we char, which allows for even more flavor extraction. You know, as someone has previously said, it's like using a tea bag the first time, right? Very rich, flavorful, lot of extraction the second time, the third time you're using it, that that extraction diminishes. Okay, so we just, again, we want the whiskey, you know, as we chill it down, remove some of those fatty acids, lipids, and so forth to, you know, prevent any of that chill haze or flocking in the whiskey. You know, we want it to be beautiful in your glass. But also, during the filtration process, we don't do a carbon filtration like a one-size-fits-all. We actually, for each one of our whiskeys, has different filtering medias and so forth. And the way that you do it, I mean, when that whiskey comes out of the barrel, there's a lot of dominant characteristics, beautiful dominant characteristics. We love the whiskey when it comes out, but we know there's, you know, large chain compounds, small chain. We want to create a balance. And by doing our custom chilled filtration, it allows you to also some of those more quieter, fruitier, estuary notes, let them be heard, let them be experienced. And, you know, we fully believe in that.
What about the grain mix that you're working with at Michter's? Tell me about the recipe and also the recipes you sort of use and also the source of the grain, because I believe there is sort of some estate grown grain that comes into play.
So, you know, going all the way back to the distillery and the granary, our mash bills consist of corn, rye, and malted barley, U.S. grade number one, non-GMO. So we're starting out with the highest quality grains. We don't give our percentages of the mash bills,
okay?
But, you know, if you have our bourbon and enjoy it, there's a nice sweetness to it. So, you know, obviously there's a fair amount of corn. If you have our single barrel Kentucky straight rye, you'll notice they're a Kentucky style rye, meaning you have to have at least 51% rye in your mash bill. We're closer to that 51%, so there's a fair amount of corn added, which really creates a nice balance of sweetness and spice overall. Very approachable rye whiskey, is not overly bold and spicy as, you know, summer made. And then we do have a 205-acre farm in Springfield, Kentucky, where we have some warehouses, but we're also working with a local farmer to grow estate-grown grains, still corn, rye, you know, and barley. But we've also done some innovation, and we have the Michter's Fort Nelson Distillery, which is our visitor-facing portion of the business, where we have it's a really cool experience. It's in downtown Louisville. We have the legendary pot stills from the original Michter's in Pennsylvania that were handcrafted in 1976 by Vendome, which is a local company out of Louisville, Kentucky, but they're known worldwide for their quality and craftsmanship. So it's really cool to have that system along with three cypress wood fermenters actually back in production and producing. So we have the Shively Distillery, where we're producing on a continuous column still to doubler pot still, 100% copper. There's over 5,000 kilograms of copper in the system, so it makes for a very beautiful, clean, but flavorful distillate, where at the Fort Nelson Distillery, we have the pot stills where we're doing a batch at a time, so a much smaller operation, essentially a craft distillery. But we're doing a lot of innovation down there because of the smaller size. We can experiment with grains coming off the farm, different yeast, and so forth. And then also, if it's something that really intrigues our interest and we're excited about, we can actually take that recipe and run it at the Shively Distillery.
But the grain from the farm, that's sort of quite a small percentage of what you're using overall at this stage?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. We've used the grain at both distilleries, but the main focus of it is for the downtown, the Fort Nelson Distillery. One thing I've learned, we've been essentially working with the local farmer since 2018, and I've learned that farming is very difficult. I work with, again, our master of maturation, Andrea Wilson, on this project, and we've had weather issues and so forth. I've actually had to fail several crops because if it doesn't meet our standards at the main distillery, we're not going to use it at our smaller distillery. And it's definitely humbling and it's definitely difficult. It's been a learning experience, but we've had some successes and we are using grains at different times. And Fort Nelson's been distilling since January 31st of 2019, so still relatively new. Those barrels, you know, are still aging, so it'll be exciting what the future holds.
How did the market react when Michter's released the first Celebration Sour Mash, which I think was 2013? You know, it looks like that was very much ahead of its time, being such a ultra-premium thousands of dollars a bottle. You can clarify exactly how much it was. But there's obviously been the trend towards bourbon as, you know, a collector's item and, you know, an investment and all that sort of thing since then. So that's 10 years ago now. It sounds like you were sort of a bit ahead of your time with what you were doing with that product.
Well, it was received well. We've had four releases now of the Celebration Sour Mash Whiskey. Each one is a different release, never to be duplicated. Michter's at that time, as I mentioned before, we've gone through the three phases, but going through phase one and then even into phase two, but from phase one, they had purchased a lot of beautiful barrels that were really starting to age. And Joe Melioko, again, our president, and Willie Pratt, our first master distiller, you know, they appreciate a lot of other spirits also. And they noticed that, you know, whether it was a very nice scotch or cognac or fine rums and so forth, they were like, we need to do something. We need to create an American whiskey that can be viewed as one of those ultra premium whiskeys. And so they started on the journey of the Celebration using our stocks. And it's been pretty exciting. I mean, we just released the 2022 edition, which was the fourth release. It's parts of seven barrels, four Kentucky straight rye and three Kentucky straight bourbon, ranging from over 12 years to well over 30 years old. And it's pretty exciting. And some of these bottles are being sold for over $10,000, $20,000 US dollars. It's pretty amazing. That's not suggested retail price, but, you know, but it is, it's pretty amazing how it's been received.
What are your thoughts personally on sort of the craze that's kind of happening in bourbon at the moment, you know, around, you know, collectability and that type of thing? I'm hearing all these stories just about some of the lengths that people have to, are going to try and get their hands on some of these bourbons.
It's pretty amazing because, again, I've been in the industry for 17 years and, you know, being kind of at the beginning of us coming out of that kind of so-called depression and as the industry really started to pick up and now as people will call the bourbon boom, I think it's very exciting. You know, as long as the producers are continuing to produce very high-quality whiskey, American whiskey, you know, I think the future is very bright. You know, those are things we can't control. Okay. So, you know, I will say sometimes when you see it, it's a very huge compliment. I mean, in March of 2022, there was a bottle of Michter's 20-year bourbon that sold for $27,500. Now, Michter's didn't put that bottle in that auction, but to think that somebody views our product in that manner is, you know, is a compliment.
Absolutely. Now, we sort of touched on sour mash, and you mentioned the blend of the Celebration Sour Mash 2022. Maybe you could just tell my listeners who might not be familiar with what sour mash is, just about that technique and how important is it to Michter's?
Sure. Well, first of all, there's sour mash whiskeys where, like, one of our expressions is called the original sour mash whiskey. It's part of our US 1 lineup, our core four. We call it a sour mash whiskey because the three grains, corn, rye, and malted barley are below the 51% required to be either a bourbon with the corn or 51% rye. So we call it a sour mash whiskey. But all of our whiskeys are made of the sour mash process. So sometimes you can hear a whiskey is made of a sweet mash where they're just using all water and then mixing in grains and then mashing it, heating it up, you know, and so forth. We actually, during our mashing process, we will introduce water into the mash cooker and we capture liquid after the distillation run. So as the fermented beer, once it's fermented, it goes through our continuous column still. By time the beer reaches the bottom of the still, we actually send all of the liquid and the grains through a strainer and collect some of that liquid and reuse it back into the mashing process. Helps us use less water, but ultimately it helps us adjust the pH. So in our mashing process, we only use the enzymes that are naturally provided by the malted barley to help convert those starches to the simple sugars. So you want to create a certain pH range where they work more efficiently, but also you're trying to create an environment that's more conducive for the yeast in the fermentation also. So it's very important. So we always use a portion of the liquid, we call it thin stillage, from the distillation process, and that essentially is what we call a sour mash whiskey, because you're reusing part of the liquid from the previous distillation. And all of our whiskies are of that process.
Now, what about the toasted barrel bourbon? We hear about charring of barrels, obviously, all the time. How unique is toasting barrels, and what does that do to the flavor profile?
Toasting is very impactful. It allows for really maximum flavor extraction from the wood. So toasting itself is the art of low temperature and time. So they'll essentially raise the barrel and place it over a small oak-fueled toasting pot. So that lower temperature, you're not trying to ignite the wood on fire like you would be with charring. Okay, so that lower temperature radiates inside the barrel and then helps break down the inner layers of the wood. There's hundreds of different toasting profiles. Okay, you can have a lower toast profile or a heavy toast profile, and they allow you to bring out different characteristics from the wood. Like a lower one could offer like a fruity characteristic, but a really heavy toast profile could bring out like mocha and smoky characteristics. And again, a wide range in between. And it allows you to work with the cooperages and say, I want, you know, a little more caramel or burnt sugars or toasted campfire notes to come from this wood and contribute flavor to the whiskey. So it's very, very impactful. Not everybody does it because it's very costly to toast before you char. And then after you spend all that time toasting the wood, you really want to come in with a well-balanced char. You don't want to come in too heavy. The heavier the char, more fire, the longer the wood's on fire. It damages those layers that you just prepared for flavor extraction. So all of our barrels are toasted and then charred. But in regards to the toasted barrel finished bourbon, in 2014, Michter's was the first producer to put out a toasted barrel finished product. And essentially what that is, using the US 1 small batch bourbon, for example, we will fully age it. We age to a taste profile, not an age statement. So I think that's one thing that we do that's a little more unique than some. It's not like just 4 years and one day it has to be in a bottle. Every week we're doing tastings, and if it's not ready and needs more time, we'll move on to the next lot and just let that sit in the barrel longer and, you know, mature a little more before we do use it. But the US 1 bourbon, fully matured, will remove it from that new toasted charred American white oak barrel and enter it into a new toasted uncharred American white oak barrel and finish it for a short amount of time. It really extracts a lot of flavors. And again, just in, you know, the bourbon itself has a lot of burnt sugars, brown sugar, toasted campfire notes, marshmallow, things like that. It really accentuates those flavors. We've done that now with the small batch bourbon, barrel strength rye. And then just in 2022, we did the second release of the original sour mash toasted barrel finish, which my understanding actually just landed in Australia. So very excited for people to get an opportunity to try it.
And we've also got the 10-year bourbon 2023 edition, I think, has just arrived as well. What's the significance of the 10-year bourbon to Michter's?
So those are our 10-year releases are very limited. Very excited about the 2023 release. We haven't released it since 2021. Last year during 2022, Andrea Wilson and I, as we were tasting, we felt that the whiskey needed one more year of aging to really add to the experience. It was very interesting to go to ownership and, you know, and present this to them, and because they were like, we're tasting this whiskey right now. There's nothing wrong with it. It's exceptional. And we're like, well, there's certain markers that we feel that if we had just another year of aging, it's going to be that much more beautiful in 2023. So we waited a year, and this is not the first time Michter's has done this. We just do not release a whiskey until it's ready. And so I'm very excited the release is here and people are going to get to enjoy it.
It seems like age statements have been, you know, Michter's has had age statements sort of since very early on, which is probably not so common in American whiskey overall.
You know, some of the regulation, you know, if a bourbon, for example, is under 4 years, it has to have an age statement on the label. If it's over 4 years, it does not. But typically we're aging our whiskeys between 5 and 7 years for our US 1 line. You know, our 10-year releases, they're not just 10 years in one day. In the past, we've had them over 12, 14. We've even had an 18-year-old release before, still sold in a 10-year bottle, labeled as a 10-year. So right. It's really, it comes down to, you know, our goal whether we're doing it or not, is to make the best American whiskey, and doing those things of not releasing until it's ready. I mean, every year we go into the warehouse multiple times collecting samples, doing organoleptic, you know, running it on equipment, and getting real-time data on how that whiskey is maturing and making real-time decisions.
Michter's had some pretty incredible accolades recently. The world's number one admired American whiskey and number two admired whiskey overall. Congratulations on
that.
Thank you. Firstly, what do you kind of attribute that incredible appreciation for what you guys are doing to?
You know, two things that really come to mind is, one, the quality of the whiskey. There's never a loss. We don't take shortcuts. Part of those six key philosophies that I was speaking about earlier. Other distilleries are doing some of those things, but not all of them. And parts of those processes are, some of them are less efficient. Some of them completely cost entirely more than, you know, like a toasted charred barrel is a lot more expensive than just a industry standard charred American white oak barrel. And so just our attention to detail and quality, but really most importantly, building the relationships with bartenders and people in the industry. One of the things that I'm very proud about is we get a lot of feedback about our hospitality, and we can't do this without the suppliers at the front and the people, you know, that are selling and using our products in cocktails. It's very important to us, and it matters. It's building a friendship. When we meet people, we always say your friends and family, you're invited to the distillery, you know, it makes a big impact.
Are there any other, you know, projects that you're working on at the moment that you can fill us in on? Maybe give us a sneak preview, or you'd have to kill me.
Yeah. You know, we are always doing what we think is fun and exciting. You know, that's the interesting thing about innovation. Some of the things never see the light of day, and then other things we're very excited about. You may have seen our legacy series, the Shanks and Bombergers. That is releases that we do that are what we say are outside that Michter's House style. And each year since 2018, we started putting a vintage on the label. We haven't settled in on an exact recipe, so we can kind of play around from year to year. So like the Shanks, which is a sour mash whiskey, it has whiskey that was aged in our new toasted charred American white oak barrels, but also whiskey that was aged in French oak barrels from the Vosges region of France. It just makes for a very beautiful whiskey. There's some spiciness. You know, there's a little more tannins in French oak. There's a little bit of dryness, and it's just a very beautiful whiskey. And then the Bombergers, we age some of that bourbon. It's a Kentucky straight bourbon. We age some of the bourbon in our traditional new toasted charred barrels. But also in 2022, we used the Chinkapin oak. It's another subspecies of American white oak. It doesn't grow as tall in nature. It's a little shorter, curvier, harder to log actually. But it really offers a nice fruity, spicy, chocolate characteristics. And it's a very rich, bold whiskey at 54%. But it's beautiful. And to me, it doesn't drink like that higher proof whiskeys that are out there. It's just very rich, flavorful, kind of a big whiskey. As Matt Bell, our distiller, he likes to call certain whiskeys big whiskeys. And I think that, you know, captures it.
What about you personally? What do you drink when you're not drinking Michter's?
You know, if it's at home, it typically is Michter's. You know, I enjoy buying bottles from our friends in the industry and trying different things. And there's a lot of great whiskeys out there. And again, it goes back to, you know, we're all making bourbons, but we're doing it differently so that your experience is differently. And that's why, you know, I fully believe like the custom chilled filtration is just a technique, a process that we use to bring out other qualities of the whiskey and highlight them. But it's just very interesting. You know, when you travel, it's nice to try local stuff, ask the bartender to recommend something. Very important.
Great. Well, Dan, thanks so much for joining us on the Drinks Adventures podcast, and enjoy your time in Sydney.
Well, I will. It's beautiful, and it's been exciting, and thank you very much for having Michter's and myself. Appreciate it.
And if you're listening in Australia, Michter's is available in selected Dan Murphy's First Choice and independent retail outlets nationally. There's only a tiny quantity of Celebration Sour Mash whiskey making its way down here. Look out for it in leading whiskey bars in your capital city.